Hello and welcome to NJ Biz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanige. My guest today is Erin Mills. She is the founder and CEO of Strathouse, which is a marketing agency that specializes in B2B virtual and live events. Erin, welcome.
Thank you for having me here today, Jeff.
Oh, well, thanks for joining me. I appreciate you taking the time. Now, you're based in, your business is based in Montclair, but like a lot of us, you did spend a lot of time, many years working in New York. If I read correctly, you started the business about 2 years ago. Is that right?
I did. Okay. September of 2020.
Okay. That's what I really wanted to hear. You started an events business during a global pandemic when there were no events happening. So I have to hear what led you to do that and how it went. So start at the beginning. Tell me what you went through to get this going.
Sure. True story. Absolutely. So the inception of Strathouse is on the heels of having run a larger marketing services organization in New York City, as you mentioned, for about a decade. And during that time, was really advantageously at the ground floor of an agency that blossomed and thrived and became a full service agency specializing in experiential marketing. Okay. And during that time, I fell in love with B2B events. So it's interesting too, kind of genesis of the business was consumer marketing. We were the first to do guerrilla and a lot of that really fun stunt level marketing. You'd see those big installations in Times Square. Usually we were attached to those. And we started to apply that methodology, that really disruptive marketing, to B2B and started to see, what does that mean for a trade show? What does that mean for, you know, an L&D conference or a sales kickoff? Or what does that mean for a customer program? And so when I left that agency, we grew that agency and the goal was to sell it. And we were able to sell it to a larger agency. And I stayed on to help with the transition. And that was agreed upon. I'd be on for at least 2 years. So I did that. And I just really felt like I found my niche in B2B events and how to make them cool and disruptive and unique. Okay. And I always thought, you know, maybe I could try my hand at this and really focus solely on B2B, solely on what I love. And for me, I love the strategic aspects, as you might have gleaned from my name on the wall. So I was like, how can I really just focus solely on event strategy, design, production for the B2B sector? And you did mention the timing was really precarious because the pandemic had set in and
right. It
happened while I was at the former agency. So I was still there on contract, working through. And when the pandemic struck, we quickly virtualized all of the events we were producing for all of our clients. And that was a great learning exercise. But it was apparent to me that with three small children at home, mm-hmm. who at the time were, if twins were three, and I have a five-year-old at the time, I needed to also just be there and really kind of have a wholesale change in sort of my lifestyle and my workplace economy, if you will. And so I talked to the owners and I said, you know, I'd really love if you'd be so gracious to, could I exit now? Because I am really, and with their full support, I can say this, they understood. I said, I'm going to try my hand at this. I don't know when. And now here's the interesting thing though, Jeff, I didn't know when. So I kind of exited. I had this great, what I thought would be a great idea, great name. I made my website, kind of put it all on park. On the back burner. And I just assumed that the pandemic would happen and the kids would be back in school in the fall and I'd be able to start this business. And it became apparent that that wasn't going to happen very quickly. Okay. And so it's funny, on the very kind of first day of homeschooling these three children in the fall, when they didn't go back to school. And here we are trying to figure out virtual kindergarten. One of my former clients said, are you ready to go? Like I've heard, you know, the rumors that you're starting your own thing and I'd love to join you. And I said to my husband in tears, like, I can't even get the math kindergarten Zoom to work. How am I going to start a company? And he said, do it. He said, we will figure it out. And we did.
Okay.
And so that was sort of the genesis of Strathouse. September 2020. It wasn't pretty. a lot of little bodies running around in the background of all my Zoom calls, but with the support of this one client, we launched. So,
okay. All right. Now, so tell me, was that, obviously, as you say, everything went virtual. So I can see, I mean, I was kind of just making fun of myself thinking that of events as in a certain way, but events, our company went completely virtual with our events during the pandemic. So I imagine there was sort of an opening there for you. Was that the biggest challenge, just starting during the pandemic and doing everything virtually, or what was the what kind of problems did you have to deal with at the outset?
Sure, I think we shared the same problems that our clients were having, right? Just in terms of how to even forecast your business, so it was really resourcing was obviously top of mind as a growing company. How do you resource?
Right.
How do you how do you project flow and workflow and plan when your clients don't even know how to do that at this point because the information is ever evolving. And so the first few months were incredibly volatile and difficult, but we finally found a rhythm, and it was with virtual events at first. So that we were doing all virtual events for almost the first year of our business, and we found a rhythm there. And it was really interesting because we found that by virtue of doing the virtual events, we also had to just figure out continuity strategies for the programming. So it wasn't just a gathering spot or a gathering moment. It was how do we take that, whatever we're trying to achieve, whether it's culture building or, you know, customer, you know, attention, retention, how do we create more of a campaign? So a lot of the work became not only events, but also just content on Slack, for example, you know, video series that we would launch on behalf of executives to stay in touch with their team. So it was interesting. It was sort of a forcing function, like events were sort of the crux, but then it really allowed us to quickly and dynamically kind of adopt other skill sets that were required to thrive in the first year. And a lot of it was about content.
Okay. All right. Now, a lot of folks, I've spoken to other folks who started businesses either just before the pandemic or during the pandemic because, you know, they were in sort of the same position, a similar position to you. They found themselves at home. They had kids. Now is the time to do it. But a continuing theme has always been access to capital and how difficult it is to get up and running. Did you have those similar problems, or were you well known enough in the business that you were able to get what you needed?
Yeah, I'm really fortunate that I decided to bootstrap it and self-fund it. It's worked out so far, knock on wood. But I had to be really choiceful with that decision in mind. So it meant that I was only going to take on the type of clients I could service, that I could service with the capital I had and with the resources I could invest in. And also just, you know, being firm in that adoption of policies so that when I took on new clients, they understood my terms. They understood if we were going to do a large production, the type of cash outlay that would be required. And I found that just by holding true to that and understanding that I did not want to have a partner in this venture, that I did not want to be venture backed, that forced me to make certain business decisions. But by holding myself accountable to those, it's been going well so far.
Okay. Good. Yeah. So tell me what differentiates you. What you started to describe a little bit about the what you saw in the business and how you could adapt that to what you're doing now. What was that process? What do you do now that others don't, that you bring that folks are willing to hire you for?
Yeah, I think one of the unique advantages of working with Strat House is that everyone's background is really diverse. And a lot of us come from consumer marketing for big entertainment brands. So for example, my senior vice president comes from Nickelodeon, where she ran events and experiences for 20 years. So we kind of very early, as I spoke of, we try to bring in that sort of that consumer mindset to B2B marketing, which I think is a differentiator. So, you know, you should, whether you're trying to build culture internally or trying to attract a prospect or keep a current client, like you should market to them as though you're marketing, might be marketing software, but why not think of marketing the new show on Netflix? It's that same level of fanaticism and, you know, that we want to tap into. And so we create experiences in that vein. So I think that's a huge competitive advantage, all of our B2C background, and try to flip the B2B model on its head. I always like to say, you know, I try to bring the cool to B2B marketing, because a lot of folks, when they hear B2B, it's such a horrible, it's just like a horible perception, because I love it. I think it's just such an exciting space to work in.
Okay. Well, being at a B2B publication myself, I agree with you. So, and it's, I've been doing this for a while. So, all right. I'm curious now about, you mentioned some of the people, you've obviously been able to hire people, but a lot of businesses have had difficulty hiring, especially since the pandemic. That may have, I'm assuming that played into your strengths, because you were able to take on some of the work that other companies could. How have you been able to manage that?
That's a great question. And I'm glad you asked, Jeff, because I feel like it speaks a lot to our values as a company. And it's funny, when I started Strat House Experience Co., you see the Co. on the wall, Co. was for company, but I've realized that it's really more about being a collaborative, and that's sort of how we resource. So we have a core team of our employees, but we then expand and contract based on the workflow, how it necessitates, you know, and whether that means we're really design heavy or content heavy this month, or we're really production heavy because we have a host of live events coming up. So it's allowed me to have this model of a lot of freelance talent, and it's actually something that I think a lot of companies used to sort of shy away from. Well, how many W-2 employees do you have versus how many contractors? And it was sort of a badge of honor having this large pool of W-2 employees. And which obviously, legalities aside, and it's important to have those, and you have to pay attention to the roles and responsibilities, of course, but in the types of work that we do, where there's so much artistry done and so much specialized, and you know, we work with purveyors and different programming, it's so interesting that we can work on this model where there's a lot of it is contract based. And that's allowed us to resource beautifully during the pandemic because we're working with people on their own terms. And we're also allowing them to work on projects that interest them and that they can really benefit by being attached to, and vice versa. So for example, when I go to resource a new project coming up, I can actually go to a team of copywriters and say, wow, you've worked on this portfolio. This might be a great match for you.
Okay.
You know, so it's really allowing us to cherry pick and also just be attuned to what I believe the current workplace requires, which is flexibility. Folks are really gravitating to project-based work. And so it's also a lot of the same things that I aspired to when I started the business for myself and my family. So I'm trying to keep that top of mind when resourcing. And so even the folks who are W-2 are full-time employees, our model is very flexible. It's very family forward. And so I'm trying to use that. And it's actually really behooving me from a resourcing perspective because I find it attracts the right type of talent.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, I'm curious. I've read that you're specialized in B2B work, but you still have a hand or at least a connection to the consumer side. How does that, what is the relationship between what you do and what other sort of marketing companies or marketing agencies do with consumers? What do you apply from the consumer world to what you do, and how does that work out?
Yeah. So I think any of the consumer work we're doing right now is really on the strategy side, not the execution. And so I think that's what applies really well. When there's a new, as I mentioned, new show coming out or a new campaign or a product launch, that strategic mindset, like, how are we going to create buzz? You know, what's the moment going to be? What's the media moment going to be? So everything we'd be thinking about from that consumer's perspective is the same thing that we apply to the B2B. And then we also think about it in terms of content delivery. So understanding from a consumer perspective, what type of content lands, you know, what are folks looking at? So, you know, for example, 10 years ago, it was BuzzFeed. Everyone loved BuzzFeed short form content. We brought that into the B2B space. So we stopped delivering, you know, 90 minute keynotes, and we collapsed everything, as most of the industry did, to lightning talks. And so a lot of the consumption habits we take from consumer and apply them to B2B, because it's really no different. In fact, you know, whatever attention span you're getting on the consumer side, you should imagine it'll shrink on the B2B side. And so you have to be prepared for that. So that's the type of philosophy we try to bring through.
Okay. Yeah. I can remember I actually worked at a B2C website for a while, and boy, did we were drilled into it. BuzzFeed and Business Insider. That's they were the ones who were doing everything right. And if you weren't doing what they did, we were getting it wrong. So that sounds really familiar to me. So great. Okay. Now I wanted to get back a little bit to what you talked about, as far as the people that you're working with now. My understanding is that you are interested in diversity, equity, and inclusion issues, and supporting working parents. How does that manifest itself now in the way you run your now 2-year-old business, as which I'm assuming has been successful? So what do you do, and what would you advise other folks in your position to do?
Yeah, so I'll start with the parenting aspect. So we really strive to be a parent friendly, you know, or caregiver friendly, to give it a broader definition, because what that means is just being able to show up for people that are important to you in your life, in your mm-hmm. personal life. And so I actually try to actually extend that to caregivers, because it really could apply to an aunt, an uncle, someone who has an affinity for their pet. So we just want to ensure that our philosophies and also our operations kind of ladder to being able to show up when it's most important for you. And so what that means to operationalize it is like less rigor in the schedule. So we try to have really flexible scheduling. We have what we call like sacred time. So anything that needs to be kept sacred, you just put it on your Google Calendar. We understand to schedule around it. You don't have to disclose why, but, and that's different for everyone. I'm finding, Jeff, you know, someone, if they show up for that spin class every morning at 6:30, that makes them a better person. That's how they you know, want to start their day. Other people might have family commitments. Mm-hmm. So you carve out that sacred time, and no, there's no questions asked. So that's one thing we're doing. Another thing that we're doing is we're just really trying to prioritize when we seek talent, unlikely candidates. Like, you know, a lot of times people are always so concerned, oh my God, there's a huge gap in my resume, or ended up, you know, taking a leave of absence, you know, a parental leave of absence. And I value that. I don't think, I would also say that it's time, given the shakeup that's happened globally between the pandemic and the economy, I think right. It's really, everyone is kind of relearning at this time. So I don't feel it's a disadvantage. I actually think that people come in with vigor, with purpose. They're excited, you know, to apply skills they've learned in the past and learn something new. And for me, I love ferocious learners, people who are excited. So for me, I always view that as an asset, eager. So that's something that's interesting about our hiring practice. In terms of, you know, DE&I, the very first event that we actually, that client that I mentioned that brought us on, it was an event called BIPOC in Tech. And so we were really just delighted to be able to work on this tech industry event that was specifically by and for BIPOC. And there was also an event for co-conspirators, allies who wish to grow their practice. And that was really our entree into kind of getting into that space from a work side. And then what we've decided to do as an agency is create sort of a pro bono pool of talent that we supply kind of to support causes moving forward. So as an extension of that, met some incredible people through the BIPOC and Tech event. One such woman, Kim Creighton, is offering a book, Profit Without Oppression, and we are supporting the book launch as a client. And so again, that was one of the reasons starting the agency, being able to choose where our time is dedicated. These are opportunities, as I mentioned, it's a client that we support pro bono, and it's an optional opportunity for our extended team. So we have, again, we have copywriters, we have designers who wish to contribute to causes. This is one such cause that they can contribute to.
Okay.
It's completely voluntary, but that's another way that we're trying to weave in kind of what we're passionate about into you know, putting practice into preach, like what we preach.
Right. Well, that's that seems to be the issue. I mean, DE&I is a huge, as I'm sure you're aware, and mm-hmm. every time we do an event on that issue, it gets a lot of attention and people want to hear these kinds of things, and ultimately it needs to start at the top, but it needs to come from everywhere within an organization. That's what I hear you saying is happens at your place.
It does. And it's funny. I think it's our responsibility as leaders to provide that access, because to your point, everyone really, you know, there's such an interest and there's a genuine interest, but how is the big question. And so when you have leaders who are setting up programs, who are setting up access to volunteer, to get involved, to support, populations who are marginalized, you know, that's where it starts. That's where it begins. And it's an effort that needs to be ongoing, because the work's never done.
Right.
And we can always improve. And so it's something that, you know, we're committed to consistently looking at our composition. And I have a good friend who also encourages us to just look at your LinkedIn profile, look at, you know, who you're surrounding yourself with, always check that composition and can challenge yourself to diversify it. We're all better for it.
Right. Okay. And finally, before I let you go, I'm curious as to what your assessment is of the business climate going forward for the next year or so. It looks the pandemic isn't over, but a lot of people would like it to be over. And it seems to me that your business is kind of a harbinger since you're doing events for other businesses. I'm curious as to what your pipeline looks like, what you're expecting over the next, say, 12 months, because that I think would give folks an idea of what the economy in general is looking
like. It's a great question. And it's funny, I was having this conversation with someone yesterday and I termed it the great consolidation. We've had a lot of greats this year, starting with the great resignation.
Right.
And then for our business, it was fascinating. We went from 100% virtual to 100% in person.
Okay.
And there was so much talk during the pandemic of hybridization and, oh, hybrid's going to be the stepping stone back to live events and everything's going to move hybrid. Well, that didn't happen at all, at least in our world and our book of work. We saw a massive shift. Let's get right back in person. It's so critical. It's so in person. It's so valuable. And we ourselves, admittedly, and many others have struggled with how do you still deliver a meaningful virtual experience in tandem concurrently with that live experience,
right?
Because it's a completely split for workforce right now. You've got folks at home, you've got folks in person. So what I'm finding, and my kind of, if I had to say my prophecy, would be that I actually think hybrid's going to come into play in the next year.
Okay.
And so I think we saw this massive pendulum swing right back to live events. I'm calling it the great consolidation because budgets are starting to flatten quickly in anticipation of what's to come. And it was already started with the economy. And so folks are trying to cram a lot into their live events. They're saying, okay, we've already budgeted for, or we've already committed to this event. It now has to be this, this, and this, right? So so they're consolidating a lot of their events into one, because they're finding, yes, there's absolute advantage to bringing everyone together. But if we're going to do so, we have to show tremendous ROI, and we can't have 80 ancillary events going on. So there's a lot of pressure on organizers right now to figure out how to do that without overwhelming folks. And so but we're just seeing this massive consolidation of efforts into events. Like, we have these people for a limited amount of time. It has to be incredibly valuable time spent together. And so what I feel will come from that is, again, that I think the hybrid model will have to evolve. I don't think it'll, we never had time to perfect it because everyone was so eager to get back, but there is a need for it, especially as we anticipate there will be additional waves of the pandemic, right? Certainly as new variants emerge. So there will, and I think regionalization is going to be a big factor as well. So I think you're going to see people gathering on a regional level where they can have a better understanding of where variants might, you know, and even frankly, from an economic perspective, regionally, how regions are performing. And then I just think we have to learn the art of that hybridization, because I think it's here. I think it's going to be a really valuable tool, and I think it will be here to stay, especially as another reason for that would be the budgets flattening as they are. So it's really about how do you consistently engage? And that's why when I started the company, you know, we don't call ourselves just an event company, we're an experience company, because those experiences have to transcend live events. They have to transcend virtual events. It's a lot about just that engagement and that continuity that we strive to deliver for our clients. So yeah, so that's sort of what I feel for the year to come. Lots to be done.
Right.
You know, we're continuing to build the ship while sailing it, the plane while flying it. I tend to mix metaphors.
Right.
But I think you're going to continue to see that. I think it's going to be a very interesting year.
Right. Well, I've actually heard that a lot too. We're building the plane while we're flying it. So, and that's that likely to continue. And it looks like you're in a good spot for that. Erin Mills, founder and CEO of Strathouse, thank you very much for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
It was my pleasure, Jeff. Thank you so much.
And thank you for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.